I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Today our guests are Mike Setlock and Ben Cisna from the Bureau of Land Management Upper Snake Field Office. We're talking about giant mountains of sand, yes, the St. Anthony Sand Dunes in East Idaho, an exotic landscape in our own backyard.
When we think of sand dunes, we automatically go to the Sahara Desert.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And then it turns out, you know, there's a lot of places that have sand dunes, and we've got some just like right out the backyard.
Just right here.
So it'll be fun to talk about.
This is going to be great to talk about. But first, we have to get into a bit of nature news. During January 7th through March 17th in 2017, Project Snowy was conducted in the Payette Basin, about 50 miles north of Boise.
Project Snowy.
Snowy
stands for something.
Seeded and natural orographic wintertime clouds, the Idaho experiment.
Okay.
You know, this is like a Netflix show right here.
Right on.
So
tell us about it.
What we were looking at is, you know, how much snow actually falls out of seeded clouds with silver iodide.
Okay.
And historically and in the past, it's actually been really difficult to measure the amount of snow from a seeded cloud because it usually coincided with natural snow. And they just didn't know how effective this is. And during this time frame, they actually kind of lucked out. It was a low snow year.
Okay.
And they were actually able to, off of 21 flights, record measurable snow off of it being seeded. And why this is so important is because when you look at our region and the semi-arid mountainous regions across the world, the water supply is dependent upon the snowpack.
Very much.
And as the populations grow and there's a higher demand on water, winters tend to be warmer and there's less and less snowpack. And so they're trying to figure out how we can recuperate that snowpack. And it's some pretty important research being done within this area. And what they found on these 21 measurable snow events, that it actually worked.
Really?
They had an equivalent of 235 Olympic-sized pools worth of water off of these snow events being seeded with silver iodide.
That's amazing.
And the great part is, it's, of course, we want to have some continued research. They're looking at doing further research not only in Idaho, but in Wyoming, Utah, and Colorado. So these areas where snowpack is vital. And then you take a look at what's happening in California with the droughts and the drastic loss of snowpacks. This really could have some benefits across the United States and the globe.
Do you think it would help the ski hills?
I would assume so, yes.
I bet it would. Everybody wins.
Everyone wins. And so winter recreation is also a very important economic factor in Idaho, right?
Oh, boy. Yes, we could always use another few inches of snow, couldn't we?
Definitely.
Right on. Well, thanks for that, Peter. You know, it's trivia time. Today we're talking about St. Anthony Sand Dunes. And of course, we're going to ask the question, how big, how extensive are the St. Anthony Sand Dunes? We're going to learn all about that and a whole lot more right after this break.
Get continued access to local news and all the programs you enjoy through the Listen Live link at KISU.org. Or try using your web-connected Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command, Play KISU.
Well, welcome back from the break. I want to welcome Mike Setlock and Ben Cisna from the Bureau of Land Management. Thank you for joining us today on The Nature of Idaho.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, good to be here as well. Thank you.
So you guys know something about St. Anthony Sand Dunes. Tell us about your positions. What do you do there at the BLM?
So this is Ben Cisna. So I started at the BLM here in Idaho Falls at the dunes back in 2011. I'm actually from Illinois, so I moved out here and just worked as a seasonal, 6 months at a time. And I did that for 6 seasons, actually, before I got picked up permanently. My job out there as an outdoor rec planner, I'm one of the lucky ones to be in the field pretty much most days. The vast majority, I'm actually out At the sand dunes a lot. I get a ride out there a lot, you know, manage the campground and all that fun stuff. So couldn't be happier with my job.
Sounds good. How about you, Mike?
And I'm an outdoor recreation planner as well. And I've done a little bit of work for the BLM in the past. I recently came from Elko, Nevada. So I've been here for about, it's almost a year now. I got here last April. So I took the advantage of the opportunity to come here to, you know, work in a place that's so unique and so different than really anywhere I've been in my BLM career. So being able to work in the sand dunes is kind of an exciting opportunity. And what I'm mostly responsible for is more of the behind the scenes than in the office setting kind of stuff. So I get out once in a while, but for the most part, I'm here to hopefully update we have a thing called a RAMP, a Recreation Area Management Plan. And we're going to try and revise that as far as how we're going to manage the sand dunes, the BLM portions, over the next 20 to 30 years. So right now we're currently going through, you know, sessions with an ID team, an interdisciplinary development team, and we're going to go through issues. We've done a lot of surveys. We're going to do some more for the public, and we're going to come up with a way to move forward with motorized use, non-motorized use, and all the other things that encompass that go on out there at the sand dune.
Oh, excellent. And I mean, I know it's not an easy process, but it's a process that needs to be done. And, you know, basically you're developing a master plan for the sand dunes so it stays around and you have productive use and still conserving this unique habitat we have in eastern Idaho.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And I think it's a real balance between that recreation experience, resource protection, and then providing safety. You know, inherently OHV, you know, riding one, it can be dangerous. And the sand dune environment is not like other places you go to ride, like in the forest or other places in Idaho. It's a unique set of skills that you acquire over time.
So as we look at the sand dunes, because, you know, I came here from the Midwest as well 6 years ago, I was really surprised that there is a sand dune in Idaho. How did we get the St. Anthony sand dunes?
You know, that's a great question. About 10,000 years ago, when the area was a lot wetter and a lot cooler, we had, you know, Mud Lake, Market Lake. We had the Snake River and the Teton River, too. And as they dried up and warmed up, all that sand from those bodies of water and tributary eventually moved from the southwest, and in the wind blowing, started blowing that sand. And that's kind of where it came from. The white quartz is what it's made up of. So it's white quartz with specks of basalt in it. So some of that basalt came from the Snake River Plain. However, you know, the sand itself is mostly white quartz, and it has iron oxide, which gives it that pale, light tan color. So many, many years ago, I mean, those things dried up, and that sand started moving, and it's kind of interesting because it moves about 10 feet a year, and over the last, you know, for how many years, it's moved about 20 miles from where it started.
20 miles?
Yeah, 20 miles.
That's incredible.
I won't give away our trivia question as far as acreage, but, yep. You know, these dunes they're so big, and you can't, you know, you can look at them from far away and you can kind of get some perspective, but you really have no idea what a 500 foot tall sand dune, what it really looks like until you're standing at the bottom of it, and they're truly impressive.
How's the sand organized? Are there linear sets of sand dunes? Is it one accumulation, or does it take on different forms depending on the time of year or season?
It takes on different forms, and primarily what we have out there, they're called Barchan sand dunes. So Barchan is an Arabic word that means ram's horn. So if you look at the sand dunes from an aerial photo on Google Earth, you'll notice that the curve is like a crescent moon. And the points are all pointing of those crescent moon northeast. So that wind is blowing from the southwest to the east, and it's forming those crescent-like shapes. There are different types of dunes. There's parabolic and there's traverse. But we have some of those too, but primarily it's all Barchan for St. Anthony.
Wonderful. And the steep side of those dunes is away from the wind or toward the wind?
That would be away from the wind.
Right.
That's what we call the slip face. So it's kind of like, maybe it's sort of like an avalanche for people to understand it. So as that wind blows, the sand builds up, it reaches a point, and then it slides off. And that's where I'm coming up with that 10 feet a year. It takes that much time for that to build up, to accumulate, and then it slides down, and that residual effect that slides down ends up expanding that dune to the northeast.
Are you still collecting and getting more sand, or are we just shifting the dunes themselves?
I think the dunes themselves are shifting.
Yeah, I don't know
what I've seen.
Is them accumulating anymore? I mean, maybe a little bit, but as far as I can tell, they just they keep moving east. You know, the county, Fremont County, is out there pretty frequently on Red Road, which is one of the main roads that runs north-south on the east side of the dunes. And they're out there with big front-end loaders, you know, every few couple months or so, scooping the sand and moving it from one side to the other of the road.
Nature has a way of putting us in our places sometimes, right?
Yep.
That's funny. What, tell me about the history of the St. Anthony sand dunes and what's its designation as a land type?
Well, it's got a lot of designations right now, but originally, I mean, it started out as just an area where people would go and just explore and look at it. And I know a lot of the locals around St. Anthony's and Rexburg, they've been going out there since, you know, for years and years. And until, you know, the BLM actually got involved with some active management, they came up with Egan Lakes Campground and Day Use Area. Until that point, it was just a dirt parking lot. And we actually ended up, you know, in the 1990s, started developing plans to build in the 2000s a 48 site campground, a day use area, and an access point, basically, for people to go from non-BLM land into the sand. And the area itself, during that process, is called an SRMA, which is a fancy acronym for Special Recreation Management Area. And that's a little over 46,000 acres of that area was designated in one of our land use plans from the 80s that identified that area as being unique and that we would manage it for recreation. We'll still take into account resource protection, but the primarily objective for that area would be recreation, for people to recreate on that sand. So that's kind of where it got started. We have some other things out there as far as an ACEC, which is an area of critical environmental concern. And that has more to do with the area itself is an historic range for wintering wildlife. So elk, deer, moose, and antelope will all migrate as, like, right now in the middle of winter. They'll come down around the sand and across the sand and kind of hang out, you know, for the winter months, conserve some energy, nibble on whatever they can find that's exposed above the snow. And that's kind of like an area for them that's protected. So that's kind of why it became that designation, to give all that wildlife a place to, you know, make it through the winter.
What's the appeal for the animals in that geographic location?
The first thing I would think would be less snow. So they're going from a higher elevation, and I'm talking, like, you know, maybe over towards Montana, Island Park, out of Yellowstone, and some of these elk are moving all the way across, you know, over 100 miles and coming around because they're trying to get away from that snow. They're trying to find windswept slopes if they can, or areas where there's bitterbrush, because some of the bitterbrush, the shrub component, will stick above the top of the snow. So there is something there for them to, you know, to nibble on. Or they'll just get in the sun where they can find and conserve energy and try to thermal regulate with some of the vegetation that's out there.
And then the dunes, do they offer some protection from wind and other cold extremes?
I think they can, as far as the pockets that are there and the low spots. As far as the animals spending too much time there, I don't know about that. But the fact that they're covered in snow right now, they're just traveling right across them, or they're on the fringes and the edges.
Okay.
So definitely, if they can get on the backward side of a slope and get out of the weather, they'll take that to their advantage and use that protection of the dune.
So we've got a recreational area and then a conservation area. And during the winter months, with the elk moving in, do you manage the conservation area different than you do with the recreational area?
Well, I mean, through the winter months, all of that area is in that Egan-Hamer winter wildlife closure. So there's really no recreation whatsoever going on during the winter months.
How do you basically let the public know that these areas are closed and that they don't necessarily have access all the time to the St. Anthony Dunes?
Right. So we put out press releases. We've got information on our website. And then the biggest part is probably us getting out on the ground, putting up signs on all the access points, putting up, you know, big maps of the whole area, just so the general public has an idea, you know, if they don't see a press release or they don't get on our website, you know, just so they know where they can and can't go.
And then just to add to that, right now we do have an area that is open year-round, but it's part of an active sand complex off of Red Road that was mentioned earlier. And that area there is actually, believe it or not, very popular right now for sledding and winter recreation activities. I've been out there with my kids sledding on the weekends, and I've seen people cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, and just sledding on the open part of the active sand that's outside the closure. So there is a portion you can still get to.
Yeah, about half of the main sand dune complex is open. So from Red Road West over to Egan Lakes Access, or Egan Lakes Campground and Day Use Area, which is the BLM site, that active sand, open sand, is open year-round. And that's all displayed on the maps that are out there.
I'm curious about, we were talking earlier about how the sand migrates over time. You know, you can tangibly see it moving. Is plant stabilization in regions, is that very important for the area?
It definitely is. I mean, once that sand leaves, we normally get wild rye to move in first, or right. Scurf pea. And then after a time, you know, it takes a lot of time for this to happen, but over hundreds of years, we might have bitterbrush and sagebrush return. So a lot of that sand that's moved, if you use Google Earth with their historic image overlay, you can kind of see the sand from 1990, 2000, and how it's migrated northeast. And the areas that weren't covered by vegetation are now. But it's a small little, you know, snapshot in time, what I'm talking about. Moving that 20 years, that's over, you know, thousands of years.
Sand grain at a time, right?
Exactly.
These are the days of our lives.
<That's right. laughs> And the grains are kind of interesting because if they're on a hard surface, they'll bounce kind of like a basketball. But once they hit something soft, like another grain, or they find a pocket from a vegetation, they'll start to build up and accumulate. And that whole process would be neat to see, like with time-lapse photography, if there's somehow you could do it, because it's kind of interesting how they form.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a few different time frames as far as the sand movement goes. Like the main dune, the large dunes, like Chokecherry, Devil's Dune, these are some of our more significant dunes and popular recreation spots for OHV users. Those, for the most part, year to year, stay pretty well the same. I mean, they will change, you know, 20 plus years from now, I'm sure they'll be different. But those spots pretty well stay the same. But, you know, you could go out after a strong windstorm and the smaller dunes, you could go on a trail or a designated route that we have through the dunes, and it could be totally different, you know, within a day. And a lot of it, I think, depends on, like, a winter like this with all the snow cover out there. I don't think we'll see a huge change in the dunes, but in years when we haven't got a lot of snow that's, you know, protecting the dunes from the winter winds, you go out and it's totally different.
So that brings up kind of an interesting point. Is we talked a little bit about the winter recreation, and when the spring and summer comes out, it's a different type of recreation. You've got a lot of people out there with motorcycles or ATVs, and you're talking about these trails are changing. So when we look at some safety aspects of recreating out on the dunes, what should people be concerned about and aware of?
Well, the main things, obviously, wear a helmet, all the safety precautions, all that sort of stuff. If you're under 18, you have to wear a helmet. That's Idaho state law. You have to have flags on your vehicle to increase visibility to others. But in my experience, the main cause of accidents, which will play into the dunes changing, is from visibility. So when it's really sunny out there and the sun is directly overhead, and especially if there's not a lot of tracks on the dunes, it all kind of just blends together, almost like snow does. So you really kind of lose your depth perception of the topography of the dunes. And, you know, you can be driving along, and it'll look like you're going on a flat area, and then there's this huge drop-off that's in between, but that drop-off is blended into the dunes behind it. So you can't see it at all. And if you're just, you know, flying along and not paying attention, you could just find yourself flying through the air. And that's, I think, the main cause of most of the serious accidents out there. And, you know when it's happening, or at least I can tell. I mean, it's kind of weird. You'll be driving, and it almost feels like you're not moving because you can't see anything coming past you to give you any perspective of how far you're traveling. So when you notice that happening, you need to slow down or stop immediately. But, you know, going out with a buddy, an experienced leader, if you've got somebody in your group that knows the area or is very experienced on the sand, have them lead the way and then you follow them, and it makes it a lot easier to judge where you're going out there.
Do you guys offer any type of safety classes for
BLM? No, we don't. We're working on getting a lot more safety messaging as far as like kiosks, bulletin boards, that sort of stuff out there. But there are some courses. ROVA is a UTV safety course, and they put on courses, but it's not specific to sand dunes. So this is something we're kind of working to see if we can figure out a good way to do this. Because like Mike had said earlier, it's a totally different environment. You know, you could be an expert trail rider, you know, or a motocross racer, you know, you name it, but you get out on the dunes and it's just totally different. And it takes quite a while to get proficient at riding out there and knowing the right techniques and just judging the landscape itself.
And with the wind conditions and those storms coming in and out like that, you're almost getting like a blank canvas every time you go out because it changes a little bit. Some of the bigger dunes may not move, but some of the smaller ones, it may be not the same way as you rode it, you know, 2 weeks ago or a month ago.
I'm interested in the wildlife that you might see while you're out there and recreating and that sort of thing. Could you tell us a little bit about that? And can you observe changes through the seasons from spring through the main part of summer and into the fall?
Like through the summer, the big popular months, there's not a whole lot of at least large animals out there that you'll see. There are a lot of beetles and stuff like that. There's actually a St. Anthony Sand Dunes tiger beetle, which is pretty exclusive to this area. Mike probably has some more information about that.
Yep.
They're kind of hard to find. You have to really look for them. But during the, you know, the fall and winter, I mean, just recently I've seen probably 50-plus mule deer in a single day and a dozen elk. Now, granted, they're in the closure right now, so they're protected from people. But I haven't seen a whole lot of those type of animals out there during the summer months.
Tiger beetles, that's kind of cool. They're kind of vicious little critters.
Absolutely, yeah. And that just goes along, too, with, like, our regulations as far as riding, you know. We try to avoid, you know, as far as their habitat. So basically the vegetated areas we don't allow people to ride in. We want people to ride on the open sand. So that kind of protects, you know, two primary things that are out there. One is that St. Anthony's tiger beetle, and the other is a primrose. It's a pale evening primrose. It's a sensitive plant, a flower that lives in some of those craggy areas and vegetated areas on the edges of the sand.
Very good. I'm wondering, when you first arrived to the dunes, when you first started working in that area, what was the first thing that struck your attention, I guess, or surprised you?
Well, like I said, when I came out from Illinois, second flattest state in the country, so there's nothing like this out there. And I'd been riding, you know, dirt bikes and four-wheelers my entire life, so I was pretty experienced. But the first time I went out there, I don't even have words. I was just blown away. It, you know, it felt so huge, and it just vast landscape of this totally alien world. But it was so much fun, and that's why I stuck around. You know, this is the only BLM job I've ever had, which is probably pretty rare for somebody to start as a seasonal and just stick around. But yeah, I love it out there.
That's great. Okay, well, that brings us to our trivia question at the top of the show. How big are the St. Anthony Sand Dunes? Guys, can you help us out with that?
Yeah, so the main dune complex from the far west end to Red Road, this is the most popular area where people ride. It's about 10,600 acres. But the dunes do keep extending farther east of Red Road. And I think from the west end to the east end, it's almost 20-some miles of sand.
That's pretty impressive. And, you know, as we talked earlier with kind of like the 20-year planning, are you guys looking at actually expanding the acreage of the St. Anthony Sand Dunes?
Not exactly. I mean, we're going to stay within the confines of that SRMA, you know, for now, as far as how we're going to manage it. But what we're planning on doing is developing alternative access, because Ejin Lakes is getting so popular that there are other places around the periphery of the sand dunes that we can allow people to stage and access the sand and not have everybody at one spot. That's something we're considering doing.
And that's awesome. I mean, it's encouraging when we've got our public in Idaho using some of these natural wonders that we have right here. And we want to thank you, Mike and Ben, for joining us today. And if you want to learn more about the St. Anthony Sand Dunes, just go to the BLM.gov and in the search bar, type in St. Anthony Sand Dunes.
Thank you so much for visiting with us today, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
The Nature of Idaho is produced at KISU-FM Studios at Idaho State University in Pocatello. Technical assistance and production by Jamin Anderson and Caitlin Hart. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and all past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at KISU.org. Find The Nature of Idaho weekly podcast on iTunes or Google Play Music. For more information, click on the Idaho logo at KISU.org or send email to noidkisu@isu.edu.